Around here, fall plots usually go into the ground around the beginning of September, which means right now is when decisions get made. And Whitetail Hill is who I would call before making those decisions. Like, literally call them. That's one thing that we love about working with Whitetail Hill is you can get a real person on the phone by call or text who will look at your situation, your soil, your shade, your goals, and tell you exactly which blend to plant and how to plant it. If it's the first plot you've ever put in, they'll walk you through the whole thing before and after the sale. And the seed they'll set you up with is good stuff. It's premium germination tested blends with zero filler. And their seed blends are built in Alabama, so you know it's going to handle southern conditions. So don't guess your way through another planting season. Go to whitetailhill.com/southern and use the code Southern for 10% off. And if you're not sure what to plant, ask them. Again, that's whitetailhill.com/southern and use that code Southern for 10% off. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com. All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. All right, y'all go ahead and mark your calendars. Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. Is the Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia. Y'all have heard us talking about it for years, and it really is. It's the highlight of our summer. We absolutely love that show. We've met so many of you guys at that show over the years, and it is just it's like the perfect environment to go and meet like-minded hunters, hang out, have a good time, and get ready for deer season. So obviously, as the name implies, it is the place to go and try all of the mobile hunting gear coming out right now. We always recommend to people, if you're thinking about getting a new stand, a new sticks, a new saddle, go try it before you buy it. The Mobile Hunters Expo lets you try almost all the brands in the mobile hunting space in one spot in one day. There's really nothing like it. So not only do you have all that gear available to you, they also have a great speaker lineup. This year they've got Bobby Worthington, Dylan Harper, Mariah Boggess, Derek Norwood, and BHA all giving presentations where you can go learn from those guys and ask them questions. So if you've heard us talk about the Mobile Hunters Expo for a couple years now and haven't made it out yet, don't let this be another year that you miss it. Y'all come on out. We'll have a great time. We're excited to meet you guys there. We can't wait for it. We'll see y'all there. Again, mark y'all's calendars. It's at the Dalton Convention Center in Dalton, Georgia, Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. See y'all there.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code SOUTHERN10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
People who say corn piles and feeders make deer nocturnal don't put the corn in the right place. They put the corn where they want the deer to be rather than where the deer are. Or where the deer want to be.
My brother, and I know other guys too, you know, dump corn out in some little private parcel they got. And it's always typically in the easiest area you can get into.
Yes.
But it's not the most strategic area. And I say strategic as in it's an area that either the wind swirls real bad or you have a bad approach. It's an easy approach, but it's a bad approach to get in there clean and get out clean. So you quickly educate deer. Quickly. I mean, that could be with anything. I mean, you could screw up a food plot with the same thing.
Yeah.
So.
Welcome back, everybody, to another Thursday Q&A edition of the podcast. Today, we're going to get into some controversial topics, maybe, again. I don't know. Y'all seem to like this stuff. So, we're going to talk about baiting, food plots, and minerals right off the rip. Then, we got some other hot takes and Q&As from listeners. Jacob, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Been working on the hunting club, and I found out that I enjoy working, prepping, building new food plots, and putting in new food plots a lot more than summer scouting.
Yep.
It's a lot more labor intensive, but it's way more fun.
So you like manual labor in the heat, but you don't like walking around in the heat.
We'll explain it later on the podcast, but partly to do is it's something that it's cool to kind of see the transformation, and also it pays off, not even just for the fall, but from turkey season and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
For summer scouting, there's a lot of times I summer scout or we've summer scouted, and it's a dud.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. Like, sometimes you find stuff like, oh, this is pretty good, but a lot of times it's like, not necessarily a waste, but like I know I'm not going to come back to this area.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's that's the benefiting aspect. Plus, it's more fun when you get buddies, kind of like oh, Cody.
Yeah.
You got all the equipment. It's like, dude, this is a blast.
It is fun. We're going to talk about it. We've had ourselves a couple days out in the field. All right, let's kick it off. Here's Jake Hollingsworth from our Circle account. His question is: are things like deer cane actually helpful in attracting deer to a spot? Or is it a placebo? Asking because it seems like from many of the podcast discussions that less is more when it comes to prepping an area for deer season. The more odd-smelling things like certain licks and feeds, stands and cameras in an area may freak a deer out, especially a mature one, or things like that actually playing off the curious nature of the deer. Just curious the best way to go about this based on what y'all have gathered, putting out interesting baits, or leave it as natural as possible. What do you think?
So, I mean, really, like, deer cane is just this mineral. I mean, it's attractant, but it's mineral-based. I think if you put it out probably right before season comes in, first off, it's not going to really do a whole bunch for you. I mean, you'll probably have some deer use it, but I feel like mineral sites, if you have land that you can put minerals on, it's something you try to get out as early as possible and establish it and then refresh it when you need to.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it would have, I don't know, maybe it would affect some deer. I think corn specifically, and we've talked to a bunch of guys about this, like when it comes to baiting and attractants, but like I'm thinking feed, corn can be a detriment to some areas.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you can have a lot of deer on corn if you dump corn out, but for whatever reason, it seems like some deer, not all of them, have different personalities. But some of them, especially if they're older bucks, like something that's 4.5 years old or older, if it's an area that's been heavily baited, you might get a little bit of usage out of it, and then they're probably just going to vacate. But we've talked to people. We've talked to people, not necessarily on the podcast, but who have had tremendous success killing deer on corn. But could it be a detriment? I think it could be a detriment if you're planning on hunting that thing and it's not in a good location where you can actually get in and get out of it. I think that's one issue because, like, my brother and I know other guys too, you know, dump corn out in some little private parcel they got. And it's always typically in the easiest area you can get into.
Yes.
But it's not the most strategic area. And I say strategic as in it's an area that either the wind swirls real bad or you have a bad approach. It's an easy approach, but it's a bad approach to get in there clean and get out clean. So you quickly educate deer. Quickly. So I think that's where probably some of the detriment comes from. And that could be with anything. I mean, you could screw up a food plot with the same thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because Sam Brown's on Circle, his hot take kind of ties into this, I think. I think he explains it perfectly with his hot take. He says, my hot take for the week, people who say corn piles and feeders make deer nocturnal don't put the corn in the right place. They put the corn where they want the deer to be rather than where the deer are or where the deer want to be, which I think is right, which I haven't I haven't put out any corn or minerals or anything like that for deer in a long time because we mostly hunt public land, and these last two clubs I've been in haven't allowed baiting or anything.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time, but I think Sam's exactly right because I have put out deer cane in the past, like way back, and they literally dug a hole in the ground eating it. But then I put it out in other places, and it didn't really get much action. So I think that I think Sam's right that it really just depends on where you put it out.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that a mature buck would necessarily just avoid it to avoid it unless he's had a reason to. Like he'll probably still come to it at night, especially in the summertime. Oh. And minerals are a summertime thing.
Well, great example. Yeah, you dump corn in like a wide open space, whether it's like in the middle of a field or in a wide open area, like wide open timber. There's no good cover around. You're probably gonna have a lot of nighttime photos. If deer, when deer use it, it's gonna be a lot of nighttime stuff. So I mean that is, I think, partly true. It would make the most sense putting it in a general area or vicinity to a good cover where deer naturally wants to be, but it's also easy for them to get to it without exposing themselves too much. So, again, I've seen that too. It's funny when you see feeders. I'm sure people kill deer like that, but it'd be like a pasture, like a cattle pasture that they're not running cattle in right now, and someone would pull a feeder slap dab in the middle of the thing. And again, don't have much experience baiting. But it's like, if you put it in the slap middle of it and all the grass is like knee high, like thigh high, specifically with a buck, like, yeah, you probably could have a group of does come out and wander out there if they don't get pressure, a whole bunch and feed on it. But mature buck's like, I don't know if I'm walking all the way slap out, you know, 100 yards off the tree line in order to try to go to that corn, that feeder. And I think that could be a detriment too. It's just like most people typically put stuff like that, I feel like, in the area where they had the like the widest observation area that's the most open, most exposed, where they have plenty of opportunity if a deer does approach. The problem is a big buck's probably not going to approach that very often during legal hunting hours.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and also to Jake's question, like, is it a placebo, the minerals or like attractants? I don't think so. I mean, the deer like it for sure. I think the deer really like it. Even since, like, was it Josh Driver was talking about mixing up his own like vanilla spray.
Oh, yeah, vanilla extract.
And spraying it all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, and getting deer on camera. Like just literally spraying it on the leaves and the ground and on the trees all in front of his camera just to get the deer to come in front of the camera so they get pictures of them. I mean, that stuff works.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, unless the bucks had a bunch of really, really bad experiences and just totally avoids those areas.
Yeah, but, exactly. Deer are curious. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, now, as a buck gets older and older, he gets less and less curious.
Yeah, he done seen stuff.
Yeah, but like...
He'll smell something, he's like, I know
like
what that
younger
is.
Deer and does and stuff, younger bucks, they're very curious. I mean, it's amazing. It's like around logging activity. You know, if something changes, deer will still use it. Mature buck may a little bit, but like, dude, they're, like, stuff happens and like they're curious. They really are.
Yep.
It's like you go tilling a food plot, they'll come right back up and look at it and be like, I smell a lot of fresh dirt. What's going on here? There ain't nothing for them to eat yet, but they're like coming to investigate what's going on. Yeah. But I don't think it's a placebo effect. I mean, yeah, deer like that stuff. I just think people misuse it. And if they're going to use it, you know, whether just to get inventory and or from a hunting standpoint, it's just not in the, probably the most ideal location for that to work.
Yeah. All right, next up we got Caleb Koss. It's kind of on the same subject line. He said, hot take, a food plot is overrated compared to bedding cover. Mature buck won't come out to eat if he doesn't feel safe getting there. Agree.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely agree.
Well, it's like when we had our episode with Caleb from Whitetail Hill, the whole idea of putting strategic food plots close to bedding cover or like really good cover for a deer to travel through makes typically will make a food plot a lot higher on the totem pole of usage versus putting it, like the other example was like in the middle of a pine, big pine stand that's unthinned and there's nothing but pine straw underneath. There's no great cover. There's no great browse. And deer's got to travel quite a ways to actually get to the food plot. Food plot's going to get a lot less use, especially by a mature buck. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a valid point.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, kind of goes back to some of the food plots we've been putting in on the club. It's like they're in areas that, like, a mature buck should frequent. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you got the cover slap right next to the freaking food plot.
Yeah, 100%.
And it sets up great for a buck to come in there, not even just to feed, but just to sit and check the things.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, speaking on our episode with Caleb, we forgot to mention this in that episode, but you can use the code SOUTHERN and get a discount on anything from Whitetail Hill. Trees or food plots. So if y'all are putting in food plots, but yeah, like the food plots that we put in, the last one that we worked on yesterday is in a spot that me and Mike both hunted last year a couple times, and it's in these pines that the deer just love spending time in. Like you saw them yesterday. You could see why the deer like to be in there. Mm-hmm. It's they were thinned. I don't know when they were thinned. It's probably been at least 4 or 5 years. So they're good and thick underneath. Mm-hmm. It's kind of on the back side of where most people hunt on the other side of this ridge. And you could climb a tree and you could watch up a lane where they thinned those pines. They cut out a lane of pine trees. And you could watch up that thing. But it was so thick that you would see the deer, but you might not get a shot at them. And that was a really good candidate for a food plot location because the deer are already in there. They're already spending a lot of time. And you're just giving them, first of all, you're opening it up a little bit so you can actually see and shoot the deer. But second of all, it gives them a little bit more of a focal point to come to. Because when me and Mike hunted that spot, they would come way up on the hill and cross. They would come out behind you and cross behind you. They were just
everywhere.
Everywhere. They were just flowing through there. So maybe this will end up concentrating them a little bit more. But yeah, we put the food plot where the deer already were, where they wanted to be.
Mm.
Took a lot of work. But,
well, yeah.
For Cody, especially.
Yeah.
The one with the equipment. Yeah. But yeah, and really all the plots that we put in this past week are all in spots like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're in areas where I feel like the deer just kind of flow through,
mm-hmm.
but they're not concentrated. Maybe they'll concentrate a little bit more now.
Yeah.
Gave them a little bit of food to eat. So let's see. Let's move on to Chris Jones. He says, hot take. A high percentage of private clubs that claim to be QDMA with antler restrictions, i.e. four on one side or an outside spread, yet make no mention of body weight and restrictions. This equals to a lot of clubs, 2 and 3 year olds getting killed because they were all legal while continuing to further educate the 4.5 year olds that the clubs swear have gone nocturnal. Give that 4 year old more credit than that. He doesn't need to go nocturnal to avoid Jim, Steve, and Tom going to the same stand on the same plot or feeder at the same time every weekend. Whitetails are professionals at staying alive. Body weight, for example, a legal buck of at least 185 or 180 pounds. Of course, we all know you can't nail the weight, but it will create a period of time for the hunter to think about what he's looking at, which will create more opportunities for the younger bucks to survive. Also, a 15 to 20 pound grace allowance would make sense. That way, if a man kills a buck that ends up 165, he's not penalized. So
that's how this club's set up.
Yeah, that's how our club's set up now. It's not necessarily body weight's one of the things that
this is one of the criteria.
For. One of the criteria. But I feel like a great example of this is the club that you just got out of. So explain that. The problem with you had with that.
Well, listen, I'll put the preface out. What's the word I'm trying to look for? Anyways.
Preface this?
Preface. There you go. Listen, guys. All right. Yeah, listen. We're crawling before we're running here. So that club, it was just an antler point restriction, but it's in a part of a county that can produce and has produced giant deer. I'm not saying that everybody's goal is to shoot a big buck, okay? I see a ton of y'all's comments, and I mentioned this, I think last Thursday, 2 Thursdays ago, like I kind of appreciate the guys who are like, it's brown, it's down. Like I'm just want some meat for the freezer. That's fine. That's cool. Okay. The thing is, if you're joining one of these clubs that they're trying to manage for a little bit older age class, it might not be the right fit. Might be a little friction there.
Yep.
Or you shoot a bunch of does too. But that club is in a phenomenal part of a county, has pretty good, deep, pretty good habitat, needs some thinning on it. But their rules were you get $3 in Alabama. All three bucks have to be 8 point or better, okay, right off the rip. And now this is not a QDMA or QDM managed club per se.
Yeah.
They don't use that terminology. They're just, you know, trying to shoot better deer. But it's eight pointer better is what you're looking for your first deer. Second buck is 8 pointer better, and it's got to be 185 pounds or 180 pounds live weight. And the third deer is the same thing, 8 pointer better, 180 pounds. And then it's kind of the old school rule of like, you need to get the deer mounted. They're not that strict. They weren't that strict on the deer mounting thing, but it's just got to be, you got to meet the weight and the point restrictions. Well, because the whole 8 pointer better for that first deer, a lot of guys would shoot the first 8 point they could see. And a lot of them be 110, 125 pound, 1.5 to 2.5 year old 8 points that get shot, which, hey, that's fine if that's what you want to do. But the emphasis on talking to the president and everybody in the club was like, hey, we're trying to have, you know, some pretty good deer.
Mm-hmm.
And also didn't realize there's a good old boy rule. One of the guys in the club I talked to, guy I met in that club, pretty good guy. He killed a couple of really nice bucks. He had a giant 6 point in front of him. He's like, it's the biggest 6 point I've ever seen. It was fighting another buck in front of him for like 20 minutes. And he's had his gun, but he's like, couldn't shoot it. It was 6 point, you know, 6 point. But he's like, it's 200 pound deer. And come to find out, and I had a situation like that with a big 7 point that was out in front of me working a scrape while I was slip hunting, and watched him for a handful of minutes and then realized he only had 3 on one side, 4 on the other. I was like, oh, I ain't going to shoot that deer. Come to find out, there's a good old boy rule that wasn't in the rule book that as long as the deer was over 180 pounds, you kill the deer. That wasn't specified. But anyways, just because of like the antler points, like 8 point or better, you're killing, and we talked a lot of biologists about this, you're killing a lot of your up and comers, like yeah. young deer that probably have a lot of potential because, you know, they're at a year and a half to 2 year, 2.5 years old, 8 points, nice frame deer. They're getting killed because they're the most active deer typically on a place. They travel a lot. They move a lot in daylight hours. They move a lot in open areas. So those are the deer that typically are going to be the ones that get shot the quickest. Y'all's club, now the club I joined with you guys, it's completely opposite.
Yep.
You know, management strategy. It's not an antler point restriction. There's just a lot of characteristics. There's four of them that you have to look for, and it's got to meet two of the four requirements in order for you to, tag that buck. Which, on the flip side, y'all implemented that last year, and Cody was talking about a lot of the stuff in the club. There's a lot of deer that made it last year that would have got shot in previous years.
Yeah.
Like just a bunch of 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds that are nice deer, but would have been killed because they would have met the old restrictions, requirements, maybe not restrictions, but requirements
mm-hmm.
for harvest. And because of the new changes, they didn't. So they all got another year on them, all got a little bit better, a little bit bigger, and maybe at some point, maybe it's this year, maybe it's next year, you should see a little bit more of a better diversity of age structure on the place, and maybe some a little bit more older bucks for you to go harvest and chase around. But yeah, I've seen it from both sides of it. And I'm like, if they would have done the same thing on that old club, dude, that place would have been stupid. Stupid. Oh my gosh. But hey, again, each their own, you know, have fun with it, you know, and go do your own thing. But also, though, another thing that was weird about that club, which I liked about y'all's club, is they only allowed for your membership, you could only kill 2 does on your membership. A year. Dude, there are so many deer in that place. I mean, it's crazy populated. But again, it's a lot of guys who, you know, grew up in the 70s and 80s with a little bit lower deer numbers, and they want to go out and they want to see 15, 20 deer plus on a food plot on afternoon hunt every time. But because of that, you just don't see a whole bunch of chasing activity during the rut. So, tons of does. Bucks have tons of options. They don't have to travel a whole bunch, and makes it a little bit slower for you. And plus, you have a really drawn out fawn drop period because they're being bred for quite a while.
Yeah, agree. All right, next up we got Nicholas Crittenden. Again, this is still on Circle. He said, hot take, using artificial deer scent / urine is a waste of money and time while you're hunting. I see why you would use it in a mock scrape, but in a hunting scenario, I've never seen it work. If anything, I think it hurts more than it helps.
So I want to mention this. There are some states that do not allow for natural deer urines, period.
Yep.
In their states. So a lot of the synthetic stuff has come about because of those regulations. I don't think, I'm not sure about this. Please write in. Y'all can leave us a comment on YouTube or something. I don't think there's any states in the Southeast that have that requirement, but I know there's some in the Midwest and out West that's their requirement. You have to use synthetic scent urine. You can't use natural urine. And it's the whole for CWD aspect and all that kind of stuff, which we don't need to necessarily get into. But I don't have any experience with the synthetics. I don't know about you.
Not really, other than when we made all those mock scrapes that one time and that dude climbed a tree 20 yards from
there. We were peeing in them. There was no synthetic urine.
No, we had all that war party scent.
Oh, but that's not synthetic. That was that's natural.
Oh, yeah, that is natural.
Yeah, it's natural.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. I know people that just swear by synthetics, that they work. I don't really know one way or another. It's never really made sense to me using it while you're hunting.
Could I explain the application of using it while hunting? The reason why a lot of people say scents don't work while they're hunting is typically you're setting up with the wind in your face. Okay.
Yes.
If you're putting the scent directly in front of you, the only thing that can smell is behind you. Deer's behind you. It might be able to smell that urine. It's probably smelling you too. It ain't coming in.
Yep.
Like, he might not be blowing or whatever, but he's probably, that deer is probably not going to come to you. So I remember it was probably like 2007 or so, bought a little bottle of Tinks, and they had a diagram on the back of the packaging of how you sense when you're hunting, and you don't put it in front of you. If the wind's in your face, you put it off 45 degree angle either side of you, you know, 50, you know, if you're bow hunting, like 40 yards out either side, to let that scent kind of drift past. So if a deer does go to circle or behind you a little bit, hopefully it smells it before it smells you to bring it in.
Yep.
But I think that's the application that where a lot of people are like, oh, scents don't work. Cause I've had a couple hunts where scents seem to work, but it's not something that I like rely on. It's like, if I have some, I don't feel like it's necessary a detriment to use. But it's also something like I don't use every single time I go in the woods or even every single hunt during the rut. A crosswind. Actually, one of the best episodes we ever did, and it wasn't even a whole episode, it was a segment of the episode talking about scents, was old Johnny Boy.
And oh,
he was
yeah.
talking about getting deer urine and freezing the urine in like ice cubes, like yep. ice cube tray in his shop freezer, not his fridge, not his freezer in his house. His wife probably kill him. but he'd take that out and he'd take a slingshot in the woods. And he does this all the time. He freezes it, puts it in a styrofoam cup, carries it to a stand when he goes hunt. And then right at daylight, whatever, he takes that slingshot and he shoots and releases those cubes of urine into different spots out in front of him, try to shoot him as far as he can. And as the sun comes up and it's kind of melts the ice cube, the urine cube, you would not want to mix that with your sweet tea. Bad day.
You would talk about a good way to get someone.
Oh, no. I don't think you'd get someone, because the second they grab that cup and bring it to the nose, they'd smell it. I mean, it'd have to be
true.
You'd have to be like,
put
really
a straw and a top on it.
That's evil. Evil. That's some hunting camp sorcery.
Yeah.
Dude. But anyways, he'd shoot him out like that, and he swears by it. He loves it. And he's like, he can shoot it not directly even upwind, but he can shoot it out again, quartering, you know, off either side of him, and you know, has success with it. But that's where I think, again, I just feel like where a lot of guys like scents don't work. Most of us are hunting up with the wind in our face. So if you're expecting the deer to kind of cross in front of you or somehow come out from in front of you, they're never going to smell it. So
yeah,
it's not going to work in that application.
All right, if you enjoy this channel, I'm going to tell you about something that you're really going to enjoy, and that is the Southern Outdoorsman Circle Community. Our Circle Community is a place where you can go deeper on the topics we discuss on the show. You can learn more. You can bounce ideas off fellow members. We've got members all over the country. So when you join up, there's probably some guys local to you, which makes it an excellent place to find new hunting buddies and get recommendations on gear, map scouting, your hunting tactics that you're using throughout the season. And it's also just a good hangout. It kind of functions almost like a forum and a Facebook group and a group chat rolled all into one. So like I said, if you're wanting to go deeper, learn more, and connect with like-minded hunters, join our Circle account. There's a link down in the description where you can join up for free today and give it a try. So we're having a great time with it. We'll see y'all over on the Circle account. Y'all hit the link in the description and go join today.
One thing we talk about with almost every guest on this show is map scouting. My favorite map scouting tool is LiDAR. If you're unfamiliar, LiDAR is basically like a 3D scan of the Earth's surface. I like to say it kind of takes away all the surprises. LiDAR is now available on OnX Hunt on their topography map. If you go to your app right now, click on the topography map, You can flip on that LiDAR feature and boom, it's going to come on and you're going to see what I'm talking about. The LiDAR is going to allow you to see things that are normally hidden from view. This might be ditches, bends in creeks, rocks, old roadbeds. I personally love old roadbeds because deer like to walk them. They're great places to find scrapes. They're great camera locations. And you know, before, an old roadbed or an old logging road might be something that you kind of happen upon while you're out scouting or hunting. Well, now with the LiDAR, before I go into an area, I can turn on that LiDAR and I can see exactly where those roadbeds are. Even old logging roads from the 1930s, you can still see them on there. So that allows me to go straight to those spots and check them out. It's just an incredibly helpful tool, and it's available now on Onyx Hunt. And hey, if you want to get 20% off your Onyx Elite membership, you can use the promo code Southern. Like I said, it's going to save you 20%. Go check out that LiDAR feature. You'll be glad you did. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt.
Y'all have heard me say it a bunch over the years, I love having a diversified freezer. Obviously, we eat a lot of venison around our house, and if I can have some fish in the freezer, maybe some small game, that's even better. But the truth is, I still eat plenty of beef, and I like having really good beef on hand without having to make another trip to the grocery store. That's one of the reasons I've used Omaha Steaks. They help me keep my freezer stocked, and when we decide we want burgers or steaks, I already know I've got the quality meat ready to go. Everything comes individually vacuum sealed, so I can pull out exactly what I need instead of having to thaw a whole pack, just like how I do with my wild game, and it's consistently really good. It's like going to a really nice butcher without having to go to a really nice butcher. One thing I'm really excited to try is their Burger Perfection Flight. So they've got burger made out of all these different cuts like ribeye, filet, New York strip, brisket, and sirloin. And I've had the brisket burgers before and they are excellent. And the cool thing about the Burger Perfection Flight is you can taste the different cuts, the different textures, and kind of get a feel for everything at once. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99 plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. See site for details. If you're traveling to hunt this fall, you need to check out Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S., making it easy for anyone to rent an RV or a camper without owning one. I'm going to be honest with you guys, I wish I knew about this sooner. There's been a couple hunts over these last few years where, you know, depending on where you're going to hunt, there might not be good hotel options, there might not be good rental house options. So, I mean, this is perfect for the traveling hunter. They've got thousands of RVs and campers nationwide available right in your neighborhood. You got multiple ways that you can travel. You can drive it yourself, you can tow it, or you can have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. Outdoorsy also has built-in peace of mind. They've got comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance included. So not only is this a good option to give you a good place to stay even when you're going somewhere pretty remote to go hunting, but it's also often more affordable than hotels, especially if you got a good group of guys going with you. So how it works is you just search and choose an RV that fits your trip and your group size, you book it with confidence, and then you hit the road, whether you're driving, towing, or getting it delivered. And right now, listeners of the Southern Outdoorsman podcast can have all service fees removed from their booking in 2026 with show code OUTDOORSMAN at outdoorsy.com. That's OUTDOORSY.com and use the code OUTDOORSMAN at checkout to remove all service fees.
Yeah, I know guys who swear by a drag rag.
My uncle, we did that all the time as kids.
Oh yeah. I used to do it. I never had luck with it, but a guy that I grew up hunting with had a lot of luck with it. And he would get to a spot like an hour earlier than normal, and he would literally just walk around all over the place with that drag rag and then J-hook into a spot. And basically what he was trying to do is just lay down a lot of tracks in the woods, lay down as much scent as he could all over the place. So if a buck hit that, you know, hopefully it would follow it to him. I think that some of them would probably smell it and not be interested at all. I think some of them might smell it and get a little spooked. And I think some of them might smell it and literally come right to you on a string.
Yeah.
Like, they're just all different.
Yeah, but also I just think of like kind of episode of Tom Brownlee leaving all that ground scent of you walking around too.
Yep.
That'd be a detriment. We'd always would do it down to Uncle Anthony's property that we grew up hunting on, family property. The house is kind of sitting on like the northern side of the property. The property's kind of rectangle. It was like middle of the rectangle is kind of how do you walk in. It was a north wind. It was terrible, but you'd had to do these big J hooks to get into spots. And we'd do drag rags literally from like 100 yards from the house all the way down and all the way to where we were going to, you know, climb. And I don't remember any of them for me necessarily having success with them, but my uncles used to do that all the time and, you know, swore by them. But it's one of those things, like, if you have to walk into a spot, I don't think it's a detriment. As long as I think the problem is with a drag rag is typically, again, you're trying to approach something from downwind, like to where you're going to climb and get up in a tree or get in the stand or whatever. If you're dragging the same way you're walking in and the wind's blowing from you down that spot, it's like, if a deer came in on it, he's gonna probably smell you when he gets within, I don't know what the distance would be, you know, 100, 150 yards, depending on how you walked in. But I think if you do one of the J hooks, like you're kind of coming down and around, going up into a spot, may, you know, have some success. I saw this one time, or I heard somebody talk about it. This is not on a podcast. I think it was a video somewhere. Guy talking about taking his dog out. And I've joked with you about doing this with Boone, because that sucker would go through any kind of brush.
Oh, yeah.
But putting doe estrus on a dog, sending a dog out. I'm serious. Dude, I'm not, like, I'm never going to do this, but I thought it was comical, but, like, maybe it would work. I don't know. Listen, but sending a dog out, not necessarily with a drag rag on, but actually, maybe it was a drag rag.
Something about spraying your dog with doe estrus?
Yeah.
Bro, you got to put him back in the truck.
I know, but maybe, that's what I'm saying. Maybe he didn't put it on the dog. I don't remember.
You were talking about making your wife mad. She goes to cuddle with your dog and it smells like the rear end of a doe.
I mean, listen, you know, decisions have to be made. That's why you have outside kennel.
You got to take one for the team.
You have bucks trying to get into the kennel.
Oh my God. That poor dog, he'd be getting chased.
Yeah.
He'd be like, what is happening?
But anyways, I heard, I can't remember where that was, but someone talking about using a dog like that. Would it work? I don't know. Is it funny to think about?
Yes. Dude, no way that wouldn't work. That would so work.
I don't know.
Your decoy dog.
Hey, listen, all these dog hunters running deer have doe estrus hooked up to all those dogs that they're flying.
Oh my God.
That ain't gonna help nothing. That's the wrong kind of circumstance. But anyway, we'll get off that. But yeah, since I think I don't have any experience with the synthetic stuff, but I think it's all about how you use it in application. Again, some guys swear by it, some guys don't care to use them. I don't think there's a right or wrong way with any of it. So,
yeah. All right, moving on. Actually, one more thing. I do have a spot where I do plan on using the scents this year.
I think so. I would hope so. Mm-hmm. I was the one who told you about it, dadgummit.
Yeah.
Hook it up, boy.
They gave me the idea. Old roadbed hunting.
Yeah.
Put some on that roadbed to get them to stop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, that thicket that roadbed runs through, there's probably deer. I know that there's deer in it all day.
Yeah.
And it's kind of low down, so the wind would swirl up there, and I can get on the hill where the wind's not swirling.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to put scent down there, it should be swirling around. So maybe those bucks that are just paralleling the edge of the road and not crossing it.
Ideal.
Pop out in there.
Yeah. Best place I feel like to put scent is in some spot where it's swirling, but you're sitting up above where the wind's not swirling. You have more consistent wind. That's like in a bowl. Like, if you're hunting, like, a thermal hub or something, you're way up high and the wind's good for you, but you can shoot to the bottom. Even the whole slingshot thing or somehow being able to get scent down there in that bottom where it's just swirling around, that would be probably one of the better applications.
No doubt. All right, moving on from Andrew Longhi. Hot take. Mature bucks are lazy. And then he said, what's y'all's opinion on camouflage versus solid colors for hunting? And I'll say this, Chris Jones replied in the comment section and stole my answer. He said efficient in their movement instead of lazy. I would agree with that. I think lazy gets the point across.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's pure laziness. I think they're just good at move. They don't have to, they're in good spots that have everything they need, so they don't have to move very much. That's how they get old.
Yeah.
So, all right. Camouflage versus solid colors.
I've always liked solid color pants, like some kind of dark brown pants, and it's not necessarily from a camouflage standpoint. It's just
fashion.
I don't know.
You're trying to be fashionable?
No, but well, I'll say this, and I've heard guys talk about this, like having where it's two completely different toned colors.
Yeah.
Like your bottoms are solid, your tops camouflage. When you're up in a tree and you look at that, it does to me break out your outline even more than just straight camo.
Yeah,
where like everything's kind of all matching. It's like distinctly different. I don't know if it helps all that much. I mean, we go hunt blue jeans. Hunt with whatever you want. You can kill deer. But to me, it's just what I like the best and what I'm feeling for that day. I'm out hunting with mostly all solid camo last year. But I used to hunt a bunch of just brown pants. cargo pants that had some good pockets on them and a camouflage top, but it doesn't matter one way or the other. To me, whatever you're most comfortable in, I say comfortable, like if you got a pair of pants or like some clothes that's more comfortable than some other stuff you got, they wear that.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's really much of a difference, like you said. I think maybe if you're hunting in a blind or a shooting house, it's maybe better to wear like a black shirt because you're back there in the shadow.
It depends on how dark it is. Some shooting houses.
Yeah.
Some of these wooden shooting houses, like in a box blind, like wooden box blind, if it's not like spray painted black, that's what Anthony does on all of his, like spray paints it super dark on, like when you're looking through the window, like what you're looking at through that window from the outside is like painted black. And then, yeah, you're wearing like dark colors while you're in there. But if it's like brown or everything, I don't care what you're wearing, they can still see if they get close enough. You start moving around a little bit. But yeah, I don't think matters all that much. I don't know how much you're hunting out of a shooting house or a blind, pop-up blind or anything like that. But yeah, just matching the natural settings, huge.
Yeah, there's a group of people who swear by flannel shirts, like earth tone type flannels.
That's fine.
And it has something to do with it's harder to pick up movement on if, with that pattern, like a horizontal pattern on it, essentially. I don't know. There might be something to that, but I don't think it matters that much. I just don't.
The best camouflage is being sitting still and having vegetation around you.
Yes.
So.
Yep, I think that is correct. All right, let's see. This is going to be a great... Jacob's definitely going to agree with this hot take. From Tyler Jones, you don't need to scout during the off-season. In-season scouting yields more opportunities. What do you think?
I don't think you don't have to. I just choose not to. Let's clarify. I know some guys who... for whatever reason, they're extremely successful with off-season scouting, either postseason, preseason, like summer scouting, whatever, and have success with that. That's great. The thing about with us and Al, if I lived in a state with a November rut, like a true, like, I'm not even a Midwest rut because Georgia's got a November rut, I'd probably be a little bit more even inclined of scouting earlier because it's such a quicker turnaround time from opening day to the rut.
Right.
Alabama... all the areas we hunt don't rut until at least December. A lot of them aren't even until January. So, like, if I find something in the summertime, it's going to look so vastly different from the summer scouting to what it's going to be like in the fall. To me, it's not worth it. I've got 3 months to scout in season to find what I'm looking for in order to kill a buck during the rut or kill one before the rut. And also, I think it's based off the state you're in. If you're, like, in Kentucky, early bow opener, or Georgia, early bow opener, yeah, some summer scouting probably be pretty handy to figure out what they're feeding on and where you want to be in order to kill one early season if that's what you're looking for. Alabama, we don't have that opportunity. I mean, most of us open in Alabama on October 15th, and I'm like, it's not – most of the states have been already open for quite a while before we even open. We're like one of the last states to open, I think.
Yep.
I mean, Florida's open way earlier than us, and they're way further south. Yeah. I think it's based off your personality, based off your state, based off if you're a rut hunter or an early season hunter. All of that, I think, is indicative of how you'll scout in order to put yourself in the best opportunity, you know, come season.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I like summer scouting, but you got to know what you're looking for. Like,
yeah, I'm looking for tick thickets. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Yeah.
I ain't trying to get alpha gal. Forget that crap.
If you're looking for old rut sign, mm-hmm. and you're looking at travel corridors and pinch points, I think summer scout can be good.
I think it is, but this is the problem. Every time a summer scout, if you go out during season, especially, I'm talking for deep south hunters in an area without a November rut, okay, like a little bit later rut. Mississippi falls into this, parts of Georgia falls into this, Louisiana, a lot of Louisiana falls into this, southern Arkansas falls into this. It's the vegetation difference. Mm-hmm. What it looks like in the summer and how thick some of that stuff can be versus what it's going to look like during hunting season can be vastly different. Unless you really know what you're looking at and what mm-hmm. is going to like fall off. When it comes to like pre-hung sets, what looks good to me, like, oh, if summer's getting like, oh, I can get up right here, compared to like now in July versus December, I'm like, dude, this could be wide open. Ain't a deer going to walk through here all that much. Now, you can find rubs and scrapes and all that kind of stuff, but I really like seeing that fresh sign. I hate listen, when it comes to summer scouting, like, I'll look for old rubs and scrapes. To me, it's like a little frustrating. This is not like, I'm not saying it's, well, some of it's not obvious at all, some of that sign. And there's just so much, typically, at least down here, so much vegetation that it hides a lot of that stuff where you've got to be up on it. Versus like kind of, you know, scouting throughout the season while you're hunting, taking notes of where you're seeing sign pop up in correlation to some of the better thick cover that's going to stay thick later in the fall, the food sources as it changes. I just feel like you can be a little mobile. Like the whole idea of like guys, I get in certain applications like, oh, I'm going to hang a pre-hung set like on a food plot or on a clear cut or something like that. I get that. But it's like if you're going in the woods and taking the food plot out of the equation, taking the open ground out of the equation, all that kind of stuff, outside of maybe scouting roadbeds and stuff,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't feel like this is a spot I need to hang a pre-hung set without judging it and having some experience on the property first. I'd rather stay, again, mobile throughout the season, learn it, see how the deer use it, and then that following year be like, okay, based on what I saw, the deer were really using this area really well. Maybe it's worth doing a pre-hung set and then doing that, but not doing that right off the rip.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't think either method's wrong, mm-hmm. and this is where we're different.
Mm-hmm.
I think both of them work. You mm-hmm. just have to know what you're looking for and kind of be confident in what you're doing, because yeah. you're really confident with what you do. I'm really confident with what I do. And as a good example, this last scrape that I found. So I hunted around this area a little bit last year, saw some deer, didn't really ever dive into it. And I went into it a couple, like probably 3 weeks ago now,
mm-hmm.
and just walked out these little ridge points that I'd been looking at on the map. And I was thinking that there's probably got to be a scrape on one of them. It just sets up where it makes sense. Like there's some saddles that kind of funnel down into this, and it's between two really nice big thickets mm-hmm. that are maybe a half mile apart, give or take. And so me and Mike went in there, and I found probably the biggest scrape that I found on the club so far.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, again, 3 weeks ago in the summertime. And I put a camera on it, and I've already got several of the bucks we were looking for on camera. Now, I bring that up to say not necessarily the buck inventory part of it,
mm-hmm.
but just the fact that I already know that's a spot I'm going to hunt, and I already know it's there, and I already know how I'm going to hunt it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to go back into it until that time. Like, So I don't have to go in-season scout it and go walking all through it. Because, again, on the club, these last couple of years, my new philosophy is just being, like, very low invasive.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get down to that scrape and find it in season, I would have to, like, really just work through that area and track it up quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, would probably be fine. But I think it's better, especially on the older bucks, to just lay off of it and just go in there when the time is right. So that's what I'm going to do.
That sounds great and dandy, but what about other members that just go off walking? Because when it comes to like the hunting pressure, it's like you can control your own hunting pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone else has the wild idea, I'm just going to dive down in that bottom and see what happens. You might have left off it, and the guy's been walking through it 3 weekends in a row, and then is pressuring the crap out. You go and hunt it, like, ain't no deer. Like, why the deer aren't showing up on camera? I think that works really good.
Hold on. I'll push back on that.
Okay.
What's any different between that and, well, if I don't shoot that
mm-hmm.
basket rack, then my neighbor is.
Oh, I'm not saying
because you're the guy. You can control what you can control.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But that's one reason.
Also, I have prior knowledge that mm-hmm. that particular area doesn't mm-hmm. really get hunted very much.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple guys that pinned out on it last year, but not very often. So I'm not too worried about the other guys. But if they do, then it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean exactly. But like the idea of in-season scouting that I like is seeing how things, and when I say in-season scouting, like you're doing like expeditional hunts, like there's areas I want to go check out and actually hunt, and either on the way there or on the way out or in between sits, working through something in order to see what's happening and what's changing sign-wise, to kind of key in on what might set up the best. And a lot of it is just even just walking roadbeds and looking for tracks and all that kind of stuff and not being so determined that, like, I'm just walking to this stand location to go hunt. But it's like while I'm going into that general area looking for what's actually changing. Like, am I starting to see tracks pop up in an area that I haven't seen tracks before in bigger tracks, even though we learned with Lindsey Thomas Jr. that big tracks don't necessarily indicate it's a buck, which is kind of heartbreaking. But or how signs popping up in certain areas and be like, okay, they're now starting to use this, or at least they're now starting to lay on sign. How can I approach from a different angle? But yeah, I mean, to each their own. If you like summer scouting, great. If you like in-season scouting, great. But like you said, it's like whatever gives you confidence and setting up for your type of success. Cause I'm not running any trail cameras. So like the thing about trail cameras, I talked to somebody about this recently. I'm trying to think who it was. It might have been one of my uncles. Actually, it was one of my uncles at a birthday party this past week. He was talking about cell cameras. He feels like it's being a detriment to him because he's so hyper-focused on, like, I'm not going to go hunt. I'm not going to do this until I have a pattern on a deer. And me and him have the conversation. It's like, yeah, your camera's looking at a very narrow path. Even if it's on a – like, he's got a lot of them on feeders on his property. And that buck could be coming by, never even coming to that feeder and walking through at all times of hours – even maybe during daylight hours, and you don't know he's there. And by the time you know he's there, you're going to hunt, you ain't seeing the deer. Mm-hmm. Instead of like trying to hunt strategically around and go off a little more sign, but not physically just using a camera to try to kill a specific deer, but using a camera to get inventory of what the deer are doing, what kind of deer are on the place that at least you're getting, you know, photos or videos of, and then hunting it like you would hunt it. He was talking about, like, this year he's going to try to take a different approach to cameras specifically, where he's like, I'm just going to try to get inventory and learn what's out there, how they're using the place, and then he's just going to hunt strategically around it. Because a lot of his stuff's a lot more pre-hung sets. He's got some spots that he's got prep for climbers, but other than that, it's like ladder stands,
yeah,
you know, on his place. Yeah, and some of them are historically great where they kill really nice bucks every single year in certain spots. And I'm like, yeah, you got that. You don't necessarily need to have the camera there to tell you when and where. You already know when it's getting hot. You
already figured it out, yeah, man.
That's where I kind of feel at. It's like with me not running any cameras. It's just like trying to find the sign that gets me excited about going to the spot. Because like, I look at the cameras as like, okay, what is on the property? I already know, like, based off what y'all talked about, there's a lot of deer that made it last year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. Now it's like trigger discipline. When a buck steps out, is that something that, first off, meets your requirements, and then also something I'm going to be happy shooting and kind of piecing apart? But
yeah. Yeah. Last thing on this is I do both. I do the summer scouting, but I also do the in season scouting. And the way that I've started doing it these last 2 or 3 years is the spots that I find in the summer that I think are going to be really good spots, I save those and I don't go into it until I think it's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then during season, if it's not right for one of those predetermined areas, or if I'm just curious about an area that I didn't scout in the summertime or where I didn't find anything, then I'll go in and I'll in season scout and hunt with a bow in my hand or a gun in my hand and use that to kind of explore new areas, but then leave my predetermined areas alone until I think it's time to go.
Yeah,
basically. So, staying on the subject, this is a video question we got from Caden Parson from Arkansas.
Hey guys, here's my question I had. As you can see, this mountain behind me, it's just covered in rocks. I mean, the whole thing is rocks, and the whole thing is just a bunch of oaks and pines and stuff like that. I've done a lot of scouting out here last year. I found a lot of places for beds, for trails, for food, muscadines, oaks, stuff like that, things that are producing. I didn't get to hunt later in the season. I got to hunt a lot earlier in the season. I ended up being busy that year. But my biggest question is, for an area like this, that's just literally, there's no grass. The whole thing is just rocks. Even like that, where that grows, it's just plants growing through the rocks. There's a bunch of oaks. How do I pinpoint exactly how to pattern a mature buck, how to kill a mature buck, what I need to go about to get to going and learning that mature buck and how to get one? I saw a big buck out here last year. I found a bunch of his beds, a bunch of his trails and everything, but I never got the chance to get a shot on him. I saw other bucks hunting out here, but they're 40 yards too far coming up a trail feeding, and I just didn't have that ability. It would very much greatly be appreciated if you could help me. I'm in the Ouachita Mountains of Arkansas, just by the Ouachita Lake, and I just don't know much. Thank you.
All right, Caden, appreciate the question. What do you think? Rocky, mountainous, I mean, oaks and pines.
Yeah, habitat diversity. And it looks like he was up in elevation. I would try to get to whatever water source. Like, if he's just trying to get inventory, whatever water source has the most green vegetation around it, that's probably where you're going to find deer right now feeding. Because, again, they're not eating acorns right now. Ain't nothing producing.
Yep.
If there's no browse at whatever elevation he's at, he's got to find where that is. Where's the greenish, most lush, that's probably a better way to put it, area in those mountains, and that's probably where he's going to find probably the most here, but also find isolated stuff like that where he can find some mature bucks. And the thing about the rock stuff, you're not going to find tracks. It's hard to find scrapes and stuff like that. You got to find specific areas that allows a deer to be able to actually scrape the ground, let alone have a licking branch. But also looking at any kind of habitat diversity. If he's in the washtows, they cut timber in the washtows.
Yep.
So they're a pine. And I'm not saying like getting a clear cut, but find where they're doing some kind of manipulation of the timber, and you're going to have more habitat diversity. You're going to have more green growth. You're going to have more browse for deer, more cover for deer. And that's typically where you're going to find some of that stuff and some of that cover that's going to be applicable for you along with the browse. So I think that's super important. If there's none of that there, at least in the general area that he's hunting, but there's still mature bucks there. Of course, there could still be mature bucks there. It's just going to be very hard because if it's that open, I mean, it's summertime. It has open woods.
Yes.
That ain't nothing. If we had stuff like that, which we do have stuff like some stuff like that, like, okay, you can summer scout, but again, it's a whole bunch of stuff that it's a whole bunch of area that doesn't set up great for at least a buck to feed right now. Okay.
Yep.
Because the lack of green vegetation. But I'd be looking for habitat diversity. I'd be looking for storm damage, tornado damage, straight line winds. Stuff like that. Something that's opened up the canopy to find vegetation and using that to your advantage. And it comes to like, how do you learn a pattern of a mature buck? Dude, it is so hard. It is like the $1 million question, because every deer is different. And you can think you have them patterned to a T, and something will change. And that is the challenge aspect. It's more so, I'd feel like, where's the highest odds that a mature buck's going to travel in general and lay yourself out in position? He's talking about deer like 40 yards too far. Sounds like a lot of bow hunting.
Yep.
And if that's the case, it's just tough. I mean, the guys, we've interviewed some guys who hunt that kind of habitat.
Chuck Young's
the number one guy from
Caden. You got to go listen to our episodes with Chuck Young.
Yeah, Chuck Young, he's in the Washtaws. Kelsey Moss, another mountain hunter's hunted a little bit of that stuff and a little bit further east of there. Kelsey Moss is a good one, but there's a couple other guys I'm trying to remember that hunt that habitat, that bow hunt it successfully. One would probably be actually, and he talked a lot about the rocks and how hard it is just to find scrapes, was Drew Atkinson.
Yep.
Now, he's in the Ozarks, one mountain system north of him, but still in the Arkansas. And Drew is a big-time bow hunter, but he hunts with every weapon. If he's got a tag in his pocket and it's open muzzleloader, rifle, or archer season, he's hunting. And he has a lot of success killing mature bucks and getting a general pattern on them and getting those deer killed. So he'd be a great one. We've done a couple episodes with Drew. But yeah, that's the challenging thing. But my thing is just look for habitat diversity. If it's all like that, you've got to find something a little bit different. Like, where's that little honey hole where that buck not only can get age on, because washouts, they can dog hunt a lot of that stuff, or he's away from, you know, some roads and stuff where dog hunters turn dogs loose, but also where's the place that he can actually feed and get enough nutrition for himself? And again, if it's all open woods like that, you got to, there's something out there. Might be a glade where it's shallow soil with a bunch of limestone rock and there's just a bunch of vegetation around it. That might be the spot that deer's, you know, spending a lot of time and he's feeding pretty heavily before the acorns drop. So stuff like that. But what about you?
Yeah, I was going to say Chuck Young, you need to go listen to the episodes with Chuck Young specifically. Second of all, people will disagree with me on this, but talking about the finding his beds and all that, I would throw that out the window. I wouldn't worry at all about trying to find individual beds. I would focus a lot more on finding just general areas where he probably feels safe. It might be, we've talked to guys who hunt those mountains who will say, like, on a north-facing slope, there'll be way more saplings on the north-facing slope. And it's, like, darker and wetter and just generally more cover. So it's, like, it might be the whole side of a mountain where he's just kind of ping-ponging around in there. And he just feels safe in that. Or it might be a cut, like what you're talking about. I'd focus more on the macro. I'd just back up, zoom out a little bit more. Not try to find the individual sign. And then when it comes to those little rock scours like that, I've never been in the Wachita Mountains really, but I've hunted places in North Alabama and Georgia that had similar kind of rock scour, just real rocky ridges like that. And I always found good sign, and I've had really good hunts on the edges of where those rock scours are at. Like if you can find where maybe the hill wraps around and the those rocks kind of go back under the ground, basically. Because the deer, they will walk across little rock scours like that, but I don't think they really like to if they can help it. So if they can go around the top of it, or if they can go around the bottom of it, or run up the sides of it in the drainages, I feel like that would be, that might could be a little pinch point. And you pair it up with some habitat diversity, like what you're talking about. He looks like he was on a ridge point maybe. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it was wide open. So if you rolled off the side of that and you, you found a little drainage coming off, a little creek or dry creek bed coming down off the side of the mountain, and there's a little bit more vegetation right there, and the ground's like dirt and not rocks, you might pick up some sign right there that, that might lead you in the right direction. So travel corridors and habitat diversity, where those two intersect, that's what I would be focusing on for sure. And then also, once you find those areas where the deer are at, in those big open wood settings like that, sometimes it can be really hard if you're bow hunting to find a spot where they are going to walk, you know, X distance from you, like 40 yards from you. And in that case, if there's just not much there terrain-wise, because some like the saddles, the benches and whatnot, they might be so big that if you sit in it, there's no guarantee that deer is going to come within bow range of you. In that situation, you might have to resort to looking for a fallen tree or something like that, just a big root ball, a big boulder, like something that the deer are going to walk around. Because I've had it also where you're in wide open woods and there's one fallen tree in the middle of those woods, and the deer just end up walking around 40 yards on either end of that tree because they're going around it rather than trying to jump over it or anything like that. So look for those little quote-unquote micro funnels to put them in bow range for you. Just little things like that, because sometimes it's hard to find a good trail in a setting like that.
Yeah, and Chuck Young talked about his biggest thing, and like was the biggest emphasis on all of his episodes he's done with us, is compounding terrain features.
Yep.
Where you have multiple things that all kind of lead into each other, like a bench that rolls into a saddle, that's got like a thermal hub adjacent to it or something like that, where there's multiple different terrain features all coming converging in one area that is just a high traffic area.
Yep.
And you've got like food, you got like, especially like during hunting season, like oaks are on portion of the mountain, and then you get bedding cover on the backside or something like that where the deer are coming up through there. And that's really what Chuck was having a lot of success on. And so, again, Chuck Young would be a phenomenal listen. And even if you've already listened to it, but it's been a couple of years, go back. And we've got one full-length video episode with him from last summer that's on YouTube. And then he's got, like, I think one or two audio-only episodes that we've done with him.
Yeah.
But yeah, Chuck.
If you go search Chuck Young Southern Outdoorsman on Apple or Spotify, you're going to find it. It'll come up. So go look for those. And then also the other thing I'll say is in some of these big woods areas that I've been hunting over the last, I don't know, 6 years, sometimes in those terrain features, when you find a spot where you're seeing deer, sometimes you just have to sit it three or four times and see what the deer are doing. And it might be like one spot in particular I'm thinking about. I've hunted it probably four or five times now, and the deer kind of come from everywhere, but most of the deer end up walking down this one little edge. And so if 70% of the deer that I see in that spot are on that edge, then maybe you cheat over to that if you're bow hunting. I rifle hunt this spot, so I don't worry about it. But if you were bow hunting, you might just have to cheat over to that. And yeah, you're going to have deer that swing around and, you know, walk in places where you're not going to have a shot at them. But after you start, as long as you're not bouncing around a ton and you find some areas where you consistently see deer and you hunt them on good days and you pay attention, you should be able to start fine-tuning those spots where even if there's not a fallen tree or a big boulder or just anything that's funneling the deer, they might just, for whatever reason, to prefer to walk this one little path where they all walk about, you know, within 10 yards of each other down this one path. So you cheat over to that, and that's just really the best you can do sometimes. So. Yeah. I love hunting that stuff. It's so fun.
It's fun with a gun.
It's very fun with a gun.
We don't bow hunt that stuff very often. We don't bow hunt that kind of terrain.
Well, even in Georgia, bow hunting in Georgia, I had a lot of fun on that trip. I just like hunting mountain areas. I feel like I can figure them out, dadgummit, on a mountain area. But anyways, we got a couple more that we're not going to have time to get to because I got to get going here in a second. We got the World Deer Expo coming up this weekend. This weekend. So we're going to have a booth there. Our merchandise is going to have some brand new stuff that's not on the website yet. That's going to be there. Y'all are going to want to come check out. So what are our booth numbers?
I was about to look that up.
We're on the top floor. So it's at the BJCC Arena in Birmingham, Alabama. There's two floors to the show. So you come in on the top floor. We are on the top floor. Kind of when you come in and you swing left, you got to go left. And then there's escalators that bring you to the bottom floor. We're kind of in the pinch point. It's like a big room and then it kind of pinches down before you get to the escalators. We're going to be right there in that general area. I can't remember where our booth numbers are. We're not in the same booth that we were in these last, what has it been, 3 years. We're not in that exact same location, but we're like, what, two booths down? So we're right there. We're right next to Weaver Meat Processing.
We are booths 519 and 520. Got two booths this year. They're side by side. This is going to be a 20-foot booth. But again, booth numbers 519 and 520 will be across from Weaver Meat Processing, which they're in 602 to 609. They've got a big booth. But top four. You can't miss us walking through there. But again, booths 519 and 520. World Deer Expo, Birmingham, Alabama, this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yep.
So y'all come hang out. And then we got our buddy, or our, my brother, buddy too, Thomas Myers with the old Hunt Kitchen. Got one of his hats on right now. He's going to be just a couple booths down from us. He's going to be 525, booth 525,
which is our old booth, right?
It's the cross from our old booth.
Oh, okay, I got you. Cool.
Oh, actually, yeah, no, he's got our old booth. Never mind, that's the wrong. He's going to be 605, that's Thomas's booth.
605.
Which is our old booth from the World Deer Expo that we've had the last couple years.
We're all right there together.
Yeah.
Right?
It's going to be a party.
Yep.
Yeah, you got to have Mike Perry right there with us, or right down from us, along with Daniel Lemon and Jeremy Aaron from Do It Yourself Hunter. And it's going to be a party. So, yeah, World Deer Expo. Hopefully, excited to see you guys. And,
we'll have that. And then we got the Mobile Hunters Expo coming up after that, August 14th
through the 16th.
Dalton Convention Center, Dalton, Georgia. That one's going to be a party. I cannot wait to go to that show. That's a highlight of our summer every year. And it's going to have a little bit of everything there in the mobile hunting world. So excited about that one. They also have a great speaker lineup this year for their seminars. So our booth's always right in front of the seminar area, which is great because I like listening to the seminars. But there were so many people last year that showed up to the show and went to those seminars that there was like a wall of humans between us and the stage. And there were so many people we couldn't hear. It was like muffling the sound of the speakers. And I missed all the seminars last year because of that. So I think I was just talking to Chris, and he's got I know Bobby Worthington's going to be speaking, and I know that a recent guest that we had on, Dylan Harper, he's going to be speaking as well.
Yeah.
So those are just two. There's a couple others that I won't name quite yet, but it's going to be a great show. Really excited about that. And like I said, everyone in the mobile hunting community is going to be there. It's going to be great.
Yep. So appreciate y'all watching the podcast. Thank y'all for listening. Look forward to seeing you at the World Deer Expo in Birmingham, Alabama this weekend. And just remember, guys, y'all stay southern.
Around here, fall plots usually go into the ground around the beginning of September, which means right now is when decisions get made. And Whitetail Hill is who I would call before making those decisions. Like, literally call them. That's one thing that we love about working with Whitetail Hill is you can get a real person on the phone by call or text who will look at your situation, your soil, your shade, your goals, and tell you exactly which blend to plant and how to plant it. If it's the first plot you've ever put in, they'll walk you through the whole thing before and after the sale. And the seed they'll set you up with is good stuff. It's premium germination tested blends with zero filler. And their seed blends are built in Alabama, so you know it's going to handle southern conditions. So don't guess your way through another planting season. Go to whitetailhill.com/southern and use the code southern for 10% off. And if you're not sure what to plant, ask them. Again, that's whitetailhill.com/southern and use that code southern for 10% off.
If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody. whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. All right, y'all go ahead and mark your calendars. Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. Is the Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia. Y'all have heard us talking about it for years, and it really is. It's the highlight of our summer. We absolutely love that show. We've met so many of you guys at that show over the years, and it is just it's like the perfect environment to go and meet like-minded hunters, hang out, have a good time, and get ready for deer season. So obviously, as the name implies, it is the place to go and try all of the mobile hunting gear coming out right now. We always recommend to people, if you're thinking about getting a new stand, a new sticks, a new saddle, go try it before you buy it. The Mobile Hunters Expo lets you try almost all the brands in the mobile hunting space in one spot in one day. There's really nothing like it. So not only do you have all that gear available to you, they also have a great speaker lineup. This year they've got Bobby Worthington, Dylan Harper, Mariah Boggess, Derek Norwood, and BHA all giving presentations where you can go learn from those guys and ask them questions. So if you've heard us talk about the Mobile Hunters Expo for a couple years now and haven't made it out yet, don't let this be another year that you miss it. Y'all come on out. We'll have a great time. We're excited to meet you guys there. We can't wait for it. We'll see y'all there. Again, mark y'all's calendars. It's at the Dalton Convention Center in Dalton, Georgia, Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. See y'all there.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.